Yo, 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 Thought Warriors! What is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan.
And it's me, Rachel Lindsay.
Okay. Before we get to the podcast, we have to have a family meeting. Rachel teased
us. Oh, no, this is the podcast.
What? The family meeting is the podcast?
It's a part of it.
It's a part of it. Okay. Let's have it, Rach. Family meeting time.
Did you... I already know the answer to this.
What?
So, no, not even gonna go there.
Wait. So we're gonna skip the pleasantries. Rachel's mad. She's upset, and she wants to get it off her chest right now.
I'm not mad.
You are.
Mad is a strong word. Mm. I am. So if you didn't tune in last week, at the end of last episode, I had to leave because one of us was on time to the podcast and one of us was 30 minutes late. Mm. So Van decided to take it upon himself to answer the mailbag questions, which I personally thought was really great because we skipped it, the podcast before. We want to give the people what they want. You guys mailbag. Take the time to submit your questions. Mm-hmm. So Van was like, I'm going to do this. And I thought, why not? Never. In my wildest dreams, did I think that Van would take the opportunity to then answer for me on the podcast? Mm. Now, this is why we're having a family meeting. You know, this came a little sooner than I thought. You know, every once in a while, you got to gather the family up, have a talk, because things seem to be off track.
Right.
We never did
this, by the way. This was something that you guys did. We never had family meetings. So this is new to me. This is exciting.
Yeah, that's why I said I'm not going to ask because I knew the answer. We had family meetings.
Right. We never had a family meeting. This is
when
great.
The family is messed up, when things aren't right, you got to sit down and you got to air out your grievances so the family can get back to what it is. Mm-hmm. Right. And right now, the Higher Learning family is off track. Mm. And I tell you why. At this time, if you haven't already, go back and listen to the mailbag. Now come back. Okay, welcome back. You know, Van, you're a funny guy. You're a funny guy. And I know you know how to be funny without putting someone down in the process. Mm. I know you can do it because you've done it before. It was cute when you said that I didn't, or what group I would want to see perform, or whatever it was that I never did. It's cute that you said the Backstreet Boys. You were wrong, by the way. It's cute that you included my family and you took us all on a road trip down to Orlando. Mm-hmm. And imagine how we would spend our time at a Backstreet Boys concert. That was cute.
Yeah.
It was funny. Then you took a left turn. I don't even know what the second question was.
Left?
Because we got to talk about the third.
What was the third? What was the second? I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't remember the second.
Okay.
Don't remember the second because I'm on the third. Mm-hmm. The third question was, what's something you wish you knew better? Mm. I'm paraphrasing here. What's something you wish you understood or you knew how to do? And for me, for yourself, you chose music. Mm-hmm. Fair answer. For me, you chose the Black experience.
Yes.
I had a lot of people write me about this.
What did they say?
A lot of people complain. And a lot of people were upset because they feel like you constantly come at me out the side of your neck.
About Blackness and stuff?
About Blackness. Mm-hmm. A lot of people feel like you disrespect me, you disrespect my upbringing, and you disrespect my family. Now, I know how to take a joke. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to come at me with some new material. Oh, I want to make fun of Rachel's Blackness. I've been there. I've done that. That's something I've experienced my entire life. But what I've, it is. I will write about it in my book. Hmm. Is it interesting? Because it's still happening to me and I'm 36. Is it interesting?
Yeah, I think it's interesting.
Why? Because you do it to me.
Well, I think it's interesting because that means it's a sore spot.
It is a sore spot.
Right.
Because we've kind of touched on it on this mm-hmm. podcast, not necessarily with me, but for some reason, because I grew up in a different way than you did, that somehow waters down my Blackness, which I think is a very unfair assessment to make. We do an entire podcast about the culture about being Black and how all these things intersect with that. But somehow, because I grew up privileged, or I went to private school, or I talk proper, or because my dad's a federal judge, somehow that waters down my Blackness and makes me not appreciate or understand the Black experience. Like it's some sort of punishment because my first generation college parents who were college students, first generation college students who worked to give me a certain lifestyle that I have, somehow that separates me from Blackness. Like your Black is better than my Black, which is so unfair because I experience Blackness just because of the fact that I'm Black. So just because I grew up in a different way from you doesn't take away my Black experience. And I think it's, I don't think it's either cute or funny when you make that joke.
Okay, so a couple of things here. The first thing is an apology. I'm sorry. If I knew that it was a sore spot, I wouldn't do it. So I apologize.
Thank
Number
you.
Two, both of my parents went to college. Both of my parents,
like,
both of my parents went to college.
Yeah.
My, like, I came up in the gifted program with all white people. Everywhere I went, because of the way I talk, because of the way that I act, because of who I was around, where I didn't go, what I didn't do, I had people say the same thing. The people that I was around, like the teasing that we did to one another, the way that we joked with one another, there's no possible way that I would take any of that stuff seriously. The people that are on the podcast that are hitting you up going that Van is disrespecting you and disrespecting your family, I don't have to disrespect anybody or disrespect you or disrespect. I don't have to make jokes about any of it. Rachel, your dad came on the podcast, if we're being real, and dressed me down for an hour. For a whole hour. And I made a big joke out of it. There are a lot of people that would have been super uncomfortable with being chastised by the parent of their podcast partner on the podcast for as long as that happened. But what did I do?
The he didn't chastise you the whole time.
He absolutely did. Like, he absolutely, to a point to where I was wondering, like, when is he going to stop?
Like, I got to go back and listen to it because I don't remember all that. Well, I mean, like, well, he definitely came on and talked to you about cursing, but also talked about how you don't have to do that to get your point across.
But at a point though, so this is my thing. So at a point though, it was a situation to where I'm like, hey, I'm in a situation where I'm on a show that I'm hosting and co-hosting, and I have a guest parent like telling me about myself. All right.
So, which I told you he wanted to come on and do.
Which I gave him the latitude to do.
You totally did.
So for me, my thing is if and I'm being honest about this. For like I won't do that anymore. That's a sore spot. But to me, we're being a little sensitive right now. And I really do think we're being a little sensitive right now. And the reason why is because you know damn well I'm just playing.
No. See, that this is where, first of all, you can't give me an apology and then tell me that I'm being sensitive. Van, you always ridicule me on the podcast. And I like literally every podcast you make a joke about something that I did that's Cosby show-esque or white. And I never say anything, right? Because it's a joke. And I know that literally every podcast. I'm fine with that. That doesn't bother me. But I think what triggered me was when you talked about the Black experience, because it's like, okay, I'm not even there to, maybe because I wasn't there to defend myself, right? If you had said it like you do normally and you talk and you joke with me and I'm there to go back at it, but it just lived there without me having to say something. And it is a sore spot for me because I've constantly been told that, but don't say it's the least Black thing I've done because you gave a rundown of how you grew up. But what I never do to you is question your Blackness. You constantly question mine, whether you're joking or not, you do it.
Right.
So, and that's, I wasn't even necessarily coming for an apology. I just is like, this is what I didn't get to do last week,
right,
which I would have came at you the same way.
Well, if you bring it to me like you're bringing it to me, which is fair and like completely, you're going to get an apology because it's not that big of a deal. It's not something that I have to do. It's not something that I will do. But the community that I come from, we can fuck with each other. And people,
but Van,
and people,
our whole podcast is fucking with each other.
So I'm trying to figure out what's the difference now.
Because it's not a personal attack like that. And I, and you're right. I am more sensitive to it for sure. And I'm telling you, if I had been on the podcast, it probably would have been a totally different thing for me. But and maybe I'm more defensive too, because ever since I've been in the public eye, my blackness has been questioned even more so because I went on a predominantly white show. I went on The Bachelor where there was a white guy there. Mm-hmm. Then I went on and married a guy who's Latino, but white passing. Mm-hmm. So people constantly just judge me, which you even said when we got, I don't even know if you said it when we got started or right before we started, that you're like, yeah, black experience over the last 4 years. Mm. You know what I mean? Like you're like as if my life started 4 years ago, which it didn't. So I feel like I'm constantly in the defense of trying to tell people how I lived 31 years of my life when they just met me for the last four or right. five, now five. So yeah, it's a sore spot for sure. Mm. But I guess I just don't like, it would have been different. Like you said, you joked about you wanted to see Prince, who I have seen in concert. And you said I wanted to go see the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah.
You're basically fucking with me then and calling me and like questioning my blackness there. That's fine. I don't care about that. But don't take away from my black experience. Maybe it's the word experience. Maybe it's the word experience that's getting me.
I won't take away from your black experience.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. 'Tis crunchy yet soft. 'Tis filling yet has a hole. 'Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's. Huzzah! A toast to breakfast.
What I will tell you is like, and we're two different people. I was on TMZ for 9 years.
Yeah.
9 years. I've been called every Uncle Tom that you could be called. I've been called Uncle Toms by black people who are so important, who have done so much that it would be breathtaking to most people to have to endure those insults. The reality is this. For me, and this is a difference. For me, you can fuck with me about anything. Like, if I know that something is a sore spot for somebody, I won't touch it.
And to be real
with you, the if I would have known in the past that that was a sore spot for you, I wouldn't do it. Because it's not
nothing you've ever done has bothered me. Like people were like, oh, people always say stuff to me when you joke about that. That doesn't bother me. Like right.
And our audience is very sensitive, just to be honest with you.
Yes,
our
they are.
Our audience,
that's just
our audience,
the world now.
Our audience is incredibly, I love the Thought Warriors, but they're incredibly sensitive. And sometimes I'm just fucking around. But if that's not the podcast, then that's not the podcast.
No, that is the podcast. Don't you now go to a place where you're like,
No. But I understand boundaries very well.
Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you ask me if I was mad? I hadn't said anything to you.
Because I knew. I knew that you were.
No, why?
Because
nothing had happened.
No, you said on the text that your feelings were hurt and that we had to have a family meeting.
No. The family meeting came after you asked me if I was mad because I was.
I texted you to check on you.
My sister had already told me to listen to the podcast. My sister actually found it funny. My sister already listened to it. She was like, "Oh, listen to it." Then you said that I was like, "I'm flying. I can't listen to it right now."
Mm-hmm.
I listened to it and I go, I'm going to say, I said, I listened and I have thoughts. And then I was like, I'm going to tell her my feelings are hurt. Then when you text me, you're like, are you mad at me?
Mm-hmm.
And you called me. I was like, oh, he's concerned.
Of course.
At first I was like, oh, I'm just going to fuck with him. And I was like, we got to have a family meeting. Then I really started to, I went back and I listened to it again and I started to think about it.
You got amped
and
up by the people is what happened.
I started to fester.
The thought wars amped you up is what happened.
No, to be honest, it really is. I swear if you had used any other word, I think it's just a sore spot for me. That's it. It's just a sore spot.
Okay. So this is the thing now. I am not going to pour salt in wounds. I don't know how people in black people in Dallas act or black people in Tallahassee act. They might get super upset whenever something brings up. Where I'm from, we Jones about it, baby. We get it in. Like, you know how many times they call me a white boy? But it's different. So what I'll say is this.
But that's not it.
I don't think
you're getting it. I get called a white girl all the time.
Right.
You make jokes about me being white or white-ish, white adjacent on every podcast.
Right.
I've never said anything.
Okay.
I've never said anything.
Hmm.
I don't think I like.
I get it.
It's all good.
No, I get it. No, seriously, no, it's not all good. It'll be all good when it's actually all good. So, like, it's not all good. This was particular because you felt like I said you didn't have the black experience.
Do people question your blackness now?
No.
They still do mine. There's the difference.
Right. But you know why they don't question my blackness anymore?
Why?
There's a couple of reasons why. Only because of the Kanye thing.
But it doesn't matter why. They just don't.
I know. They like.
And they still do for me.
But I'll tell you something else. There are people who, when you say people, I assume you mean the majority of people. There are still people who question my blackness. Like, there are still people that say that even now, that because I work on The Ringer and that, like, I work for Bill and that all of that stuff, there are people. Joe Budden did that. Like, Joe so, Budden. But whoa, wait a second. Don't downplay that. That is a gigantic, large platform where a guy went on his platform and said that I was whitewashed. And that they had took me and put me under Bill Simmons. Do you know what I did with that? I fucking ignored it. And the reason why I ignored it is because I don't give a fuck what Joe thinks about my blackness. Me and him talked about it. We're cool. I don't give a fuck what Joe thinks about my blackness. I don't give a fuck what the entirety of the Joe Budden podcast audience thinks about my blackness. God bless a massive fan base. You want to say I'm white, I'm whitewashed, I'm tokenized, whatever. Give a fuck about that. Like, in a real way, I don't care. I spent 9 years caring about what everybody thought about me. But having said all of that, what I'm not going to do ever is grind salt in a wound about somebody that I care about, and I care about you deeply, so I won't do that again. I won't. Those jokes don't have to be made.
Which is why your opinion would matter to me. And if Joe Budden said it about me, it wouldn't.
Nah, you go at that because, nigga if he said it. You get him.
Well, that's also my personality. Yeah. That's my personality, sure. But I care about what you think. Mm-hmm. And this is why you have a family meeting.
Right.
Welcome to a Cosby show-esque family meeting. This is what you do.
Let me tell you what's better than having a family meeting is what we used to do in my family. You know what we used to do? We used to just not talk about it until it festers and then your parents get divorced. That's a better option. So
dark.
Like my parents would like, ooh, stuff would happen. You know, me and my dad can't talk on the phone now. And that's a better way. You know, like I'm telling you, divorce is the answer. So my parents had all of these problems and they would never talk about them. And then one day mom was like, I got to move out. I was like, what? I was like, oh shit, she's really leaving. And then that was that. That's better than the family meetings. Those suck. Let me ask you a question.
Next time I'll just quit the podcast. According to that logic, right. I'm out.
That would be so hilarious if like they popped up, yo, Thought Warriors. What's up? It is I, Van Lathan, and it's me, Trudy. I'm sorry, but were there any other things that like?
No, we're all good.
Any other stuff? Can I still make fun of the
you
judge?
You can make fun of
the judge.
You can make fun of the judge. You can make fun of the religion. You can make fun of that. You know, I'll go to a Backstreet Boys. You can make fun of all of that. Just you know.
You know what the crazy thing is? I've seen the Backstreet Boys, and I never saw Prince. I've seen the Backstreet Boys twice.
I've seen both. My answer would have been Michael Jackson to that.
Really?
Just FYI.
You get to see white people and black people at the same time. You get to see a guy who does both. By the way, we have to litigate the Michael Jackson thing.
We talked about it.
Nah, we got to do a whole podcast on it. I want to do like a whole podcast on the entire... Why though? Why can't we talk about this?
We can talk about it. Maybe I'm blowing it up. Maybe it's not as controversial as I think it is, but I don't know. Ever since I watched the Chasing Neverland, Finding Neverland, I've been messed up ever since. I've been messed up.
So look, I'm proposing something. I'm proposing that every couple of months we do what's called a higher learning deep dive. Where we take one thing and we do like an hour 30 podcast and just give all the people all the information. Because there's still so much shit that people say. Like when I post something about Michael Jackson and the fact that I don't feel that it's like weird listening to Michael. You know, people come back and say like, you know, all of those guys lied. And I got proof that they lied. And I'm like, damn, is that true? And I haven't really done enough research to go in there, but we should do this.
Yeah. No, there was something new that I think maybe on a post that you did. Okay. I like this.
Right.
I like this. There's a documentary. Okay, we'll get into that later. Yes, we will do a deep dive. Michael Jackson, episode one.
So let's do a couple of we do Michael Jackson episode one, and then the second one could be your upbringing.
My upbringing works.
Number two. Okay.
I thought you were gonna say UFOs.
Oh my God.
That's like really taking flight.
Rachel, what are you gonna do when the UFOs come to Earth?
Literally, somebody said this to me in the makeup chair. I'm telling you, ignorance is bliss. I don't want to have to worry about this. We got too much other stuff. It's not real to me. Until I see it in my face, it's not real.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that because of Jesus, then that means there can be no aliens?
No, I
a lot of people have been
true.
Telling me that lately, that because of Jesus, there could be no
what
aliens.
What are you basing it off of, the Bible? There's a lot of things that are left out of the Bible.
Like
though.
What? Send the judge up a building right now.
Well, we know that there were other books written that weren't included in the Bible, right? Mm-hmm. There's 66 books, but there were other books that were written that weren't all included. Mm-hmm. What's in it?
Is there anything in the Bible, before we move on to topics, is there anything in the Bible that you don't think is true?
I got to think about that. Nobody's ever asked me that question before. I'm scared.
Wait. I'll tell you why. Because somebody wants...
This should be your serious question.
Somebody wants... Actually, that's actually not a bad one. I had a different one that's really gonna knock your socks off. But like, somebody came to me one time. They was like, do you believe that Jonah was really inside of a well?
Wait, is this because of the recent well story?
Yeah. Like, do you think that Jonah was really inside of a well? And I was like,
I don't know, because the pictures used to have him like sitting at a desk with a lamp on.
See,
writing.
This is the thing. Wait a second. This is the thing. So I can't believe you just said that, because this is the thing. Wait a minute. Because the dude was
Wait a second.
My cousin hit me. My cousin goes, he said, because it's not like they showed him in the belly of the whale getting like fucked up by the whale's stomach acids or nothing. My brother was like, he was in that bitch and he had a recliner and he had a light. Like, he had set it up all. It's like, there's no way that it happened like that. And because I don't want to go against the Bible, I had to be like, yo, I got to go. Like, but seriously, like Jonah, like,
how did he have electricity?
A couple of trips inside of the well. Hold on. Let me find a picture of Jonah inside the well.
Oh my gosh.
Jonah in the well. Let me see. Hold on. Images. Well, it's a couple of images in here of Jonah.
Is he sitting at a desk?
Well, it's a couple of images in here of Jonah, like, not having it made. But it's a couple. There's one in here where he got a candle on inside the well. See what I'm saying?
See?
Like, he got a candle inside the well. And the well looks thrilled to have Jonah in there, too, by the way, which I don't think would happen. Anyway, all right, let's take a break.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. 'Tis crunchy yet soft. 'Tis filling yet has a hole. 'Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's, huzzah, a toast to breakfast.
Okay, so, Lil Nas X is back.
Yes, he is.
He's back, Rachel. Last night, there were the BET Awards. We were taping this on a Monday. This will be out on a Tuesday. Lil Nas X was at the BET Awards. This is BET. And he did Call Me By Your Name. Now, I was actually happy about this performance when I first saw it for one reason. You know why?
Remember the time?
No. Oh, that's a good one. Because he did bring that back. No. But, mm-hmm. But we're doing a lot of Michael Jackson stuff. I just want to let you know. Like, it's going to be some of our thought warriors are going
to
be mad.
It's so a part of my life. It's hard to let that go.
We've already sent them on an emotional journey throughout the first portion of the podcast, and now we're triggering them again. No, I was happy because Satan wasn't up there. I was like, I just knew that I was going to be all triggered dealing with the devil and all of that stuff. It's like, I was really happy that Satan wasn't up there. But anyway, he did the performance. Great performance. Song
was
catchy.
Yeah, it was really good.
And then at the end, he kissed a man.
He more than, they made out. It mm-hmm. was a steamy kiss.
Yeah, kissed a man on his lips. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts?
Good for him. Mm. Listen, Lil Nas X is out here living the life that he wants to live. And I love that, unapologetically being himself. I had the chance to interview him on the carpet last night. I was out there at the BET Awards. It was hot. It was blazing. I was miserable, but I enjoyed being out there for culture's biggest night.
You left yourself open
Black
for one.
X.
You left yourself.
What did
yourself,
I do? What did I say? I'm just melting. Is it melting?
No, you said you were miserable at the BET Awards. You left yourself open for one. I'm just saying. I didn't take it. I won't do it. I'm just gonna let you know.
No.
You left yourself
open
for one.
The only way that would suck is if you were like, you had no business being there.
Oh,
they
well,
needed
yeah.
somebody who could understand the experience. Like, that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about.
That's good.
You talk about me.
Look how good. Look, that's a good one. Look at you. You, that's a good one.
I've heard it all. It's like forehead jokes. Lil Nas X. So he walked the carpet twice. He did an outfit change, and I loved it. Very dramatic. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Very much so, like, look at me. Because he is out here being himself in a way that he's never been able to be before. Mm. I loved it. I love that he was dancing. I don't know if we've really seen him dance like that before.
He could get it, too. He did a good job.
Yeah. Right. The Remember the Times, the Michael Jackson tribute. Mm-hmm. And then he said, I'm going to let y'all see how I do it. And he did.
So I think two things here. I think one thing, and then I have a question. And since I've started the podcast in the problematic basket, I'm just going to stay there. So the first thing is this. I think that was the most important performance in BET Awards history.
Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, the BET Awards has had some really important performances. One that comes to mind is Beyonce announcing to the world that she was a solo artist, which set forth a pop career that, you know, or a pop R&B career that is going to go down as one of the all-time greats. Been a lot of moments on the BET Awards stage that meant a lot to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously after Michael died, there were some amazing performances that year. But with the history of BET, sometimes in the past, BET had been accused of not having enough programming or not leaning into the diversity that exists in the Black community in terms of our LGBTQ community.
And did you say PT?
I might have said PT. LGBT.
Because last time you said like XYZ in the middle of it as well.
LGBTQ plus community. BET has not, sometimes they've been accused of not giving a big enough platform or highlighting them. Now, some things are happening different now. There's some shows over there, and there's definitely been a lot of progress in that area. Mm-hmm. But on its flagship moment, to prominently feature Lil Nas X in that way was very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
It,
mm-hmm.
to me, was symbolic, and it was BET finally, not finally, I don't want to say finally, but BET making a very intentional decision to put their arms around the community and say, hey. And the ovation that it got from the crowd, it was just a very, very affirming moment.
Yeah.
And I thought for that reason, in terms of moving a step forward, moving two steps forward, three steps forward, it was the most important performance that I've actually ever seen on that stage for that reason.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I hear you say it that way, absolutely. I agree with you.
Number two.
Uh-oh.
And I'm asking this question with all, with vulnerability, with honesty, with everything. How do I get over the slight uncomfortability that I feel at seeing two men kiss?
Well, that's not a question I can answer. What?
The fact that I look at it and a part of my body still tenses up is, it brings me a lot of shame.
I think, can I ask you, is it because they were Black?
No, it's...
Okay.
It's not because they're Black, it's because something still says weird.
Can I just say that that's an honest thing, very honest for you to say that a lot of people would not admit to? Mm-hmm. And I think the reason is because it's not normalized yet. Sure, being gay is way more accepted than it was decades ago, but seeing relationships play out in front of us and on television and in pop culture between men. Women, it is there. It's more normalized. But for men, it's not. And so I think there comes a time when things have become more normalized in our society than at a time they weren't. Like, you know, women kissing or just a relationship between two people from the community or even sex, right? There was a time when sex was taboo and it made people clutch their pearls because they had not seen it that way immersed in our pop culture. But I think that that's why it is that for you, because we don't see that every day. You don't see men kissing on television every day. Mm. So that's probably why you have that reaction, because for so long, and especially in our community, we've been told that that's not right. We've been told that that's not normal. And I know that's not what you believe, but when that's been ingrained in your subconscious or whatever for such a long time, when you see it, I do think it's very honest for you to say that that's the reaction that you have. And it explains why we need to see more of it to normalize it, so the next generation doesn't have that same type of reaction.
So when I first got out to L.A., I saw something that I had never really seen before with, you know, sharing my community with my gay brothers and my lesbian sisters. I saw, and this was very important. I saw something. I saw lovingness between same-sex couples. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the main things that sort of gets in the way of people's understanding of these things is that they think that this is just about sex. They think this is just about
That's a good point.
Who you want to fuck, right? Mm-hmm. Straight people want to fuck the opposite sex. Gay people want to fuck the same sex. And some people want to fuck everybody. It's just about sex. So when it's just about sex, it becomes very sort of primal and debased almost. And it's something that's easy to make lustful and lewd and tawdry in a way. When you make any relationship just about sex, especially one that you think is taboo. But I remember, and this is gonna sound so bad, but I remember being at a function with one of my friends and his boyfriend came around and just like put his hand on the back of his neck and was just like rubbing the back of his neck. This was like 2006 or 7, and was just rubbing the back of his neck as he was talking. And it dawned on me, like at 26, I was like, these guys are in love. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't, like these guys are, this is much deeper than I had been led to believe that it is. Like these guys, like, they love to see one another when somebody gets off a plane from a long trip. They argue about bills that they share.
They're like us.
I mean, this sounds so crazy, but I was like, yeah, like, and then I was like, well, damn.
That's because you're programmed to think a certain way.
Like, I thought that two guys cruised around and the only other time I'd actually seen this was when Pedro Zamora got married on The Real World season 2. You know, and I remember, wow, like marriage or union. And it's not something that anybody was hiding, because anytime you make somebody hide something, like it seems a little bit more illicit. Mm-hmm. Anytime somebody hides something, like Kalika used to get mad about me and porn. She used to be like, just watch the porn. It's like, why? Because when you hide the porn, it makes me feel like there is something to hide. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know, but despite all of that, at 41 years old, I watched The Kiss, and then just something goes, not that I go, ew, or nasty, or I change the channel, but something tenses up like two guys kissing.
You're not used to it.
Still.
You're not used to it. But I think you sharing what you just shared, somebody may be feeling the same way that you are, and it may help them, right? They're not any different from us just because they love in a way that's different from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they love in the same way, just with different parts.
Yes. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? I mean, like, they don't have the same type of relationship that you have is what I meant. Not like I mean, like same sex versus heterosexual. I don't know. This is sounding bad. I mean,
you're sounding like Mike Pence is what it's sounding like.
Y'all know my heart.
We sound like two Mike Pences right now.
No, we don't.
We're gonna change it. We're gonna change.
I sat there like this. I sat there like this.
I didn't tense, man. You tense homophobic them. Bastard. All right. Not so good news out of the state of Arkansas. We talked a little bit about something that had gone down with the police encounter in Arkansas a couple of weeks ago, where a state trooper had used a pit maneuver on a woman who turned out to be pregnant and turned her car over in Arkansas. Something else, that woman was able to survive, and her baby survived as well. We're going to bring updates on that case pretty soon, but something happened that was unfortunately a little bit more lethal. There was a police-involved shooting in Arkansas. This one is bad. Okay. Hunter Britton. It was a 17-year-old boy.
Yeah.
17-year-old kid was pulled over for a traffic stop not too long ago, around 3 a.m. He was at a local auto shop. All right. Now, Hunter had been all night long, he had been working on his car and trying to get his transmission to fixed so that he could get up and go to work in the morning. Apparently, he was still having trouble with his transmission. He could not get his car to stop rolling back, according to somebody who was there with Hunter in the driver's seat. He got out and tried to put something behind the car to stop it from rolling back. And when he did that, according to somebody at the scene, Hunter was shot and he is now dead. Now, authorities have said that Hunter... they got a call that Hunter was in the woods shooting at cops before this. As far as we have no confirmation whether or not that's true. Hunter's uncle said that definitely was not true, that he had been up all night working on his car, trying to get his car ready so he could go to work in the morning. Here's the interesting thing about this story. Not so much interesting. Hunter's white.
Right.
Hunter's a white kid. Okay. And so because he's white, it automatically sort of divorces one of the main sort of themes that we've seen in these police shootings, which is white officer, black kid, or even black officer, black kid, or whatever. And it puts the onus here squarely on the issue of policing. And it's interesting that these two incidents in Arkansas that have happened, both to Hunter and to the lady who had her car flipped, were both white people. So it speaks more to a culture of policing than it does anything specifically racial.
Right.
Does the fact that he's white change anything for you? How do you analyze this situation that's sort of just starting? There's a call right now for justice for Hunter.
No, it doesn't change anything to me, because one of the things that we've been talking about, yes, we've been talking about there being an issue of an attack on black and brown people. But at the same time, the other part of it is the attack is because of the police, and there needs to be police reform. I found it interesting that the same things that they were asking for in Justice for Hunter are the same things that we ask for when we're asking for police reform. They're saying that there needs to be a change. They're asking the same questions. Why couldn't he have done this? Why didn't he, you know, wait? Why didn't he, like, all these questions? And it doesn't matter that Hunter's white. It's the fact that this police needed better training. That's another thing that they're saying. There needs to be some type of reform. These people who are calling for justice for Hunter are also saying this is happening all over the country. They're acknowledging it. There is a problem within our country when it comes to police. And it just shows the need for reform. Doesn't change anything for me.
So the uncle's
it
name
adds to it, to be honest.
The uncle's name is Jesse. And Jesse said that he shut down the officer's assertion that Hunter was shooting at police. There's an investigation that's going on right now. Jesse, like I said that Hunter was up all night trying to fix his truck's transmission. They asked him what justice is, and Jesse says, justice looks like this officer getting what's coming to them, just like any one of us would if we shot and killed somebody. Harley Britton, who is Hunter's other uncle, said that the incident shows a need for law enforcement reform. This is happening all over the country, and this is happening too close to home for us. If he felt like he was in danger, he's got a taser on his hip. He didn't reach for that. He reached for his gun and shot a 17-year-old boy in cold blood in his throat, is apparently where Hunter was shot. So look, I think when we talk about the police, we use race as a very, very specific structure here that we're up against. And, you know, that actually is apt in most of these situations. Yeah, right. When you look at the rate in which black people are arrested, detained, pulled over, whatever, the reason why these incidents go bad more is because we're being stopped, profiled, and targeted more.
Mm-hmm.
That is a separate issue from the substandard and incompetent policing that we're getting all over the country. And I don't understand how, as an American, you can't be aghast at the rate in which we're seeing this happen. At the prevalence of the police, people that we've bestowed with almost godlike power in society. They tell you to stop, you got to stop. They tell you to stand, you got to stand. They tell you pull over, you got to pull over. Hands up, spread them, whatever you do. And they just seem to be accidental terrorists all over the country. This not fucking with y'all.
Yeah.
Like I don't know what to say. Do you think that this kid being white is gonna make this go any different of a way? Like what, how does this?
No, it's not gonna make it, because it's gotta be, and I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast, it's gotta be somebody, you know, it's gotta be somebody white, the child of somebody who's white with power, whose parent has power or money, or, you know what I mean? Somebody who's like strongly against police reform. It's got to be somebody like that, where it's got to hit home. Because even here, they tried to lie on Hunter. They tried to say that he was in the woods, like shooting at police officers at 3 in the morning, as if there are that many police officers driving by. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I think, though, that, and we didn't talk about this last week, but it shows that the answer is not putting out more police officers. The answer isn't more cops. And we didn't talk about this last week with Joe Biden and what I don't know if he proposed it or if he already implemented it. But that's not the answer here. It's just not.
Well, what is the answer?
I mean, isn't that a question that we're asking all the time, every single time we have to discuss one of these shootings? I don't know.
Man, look, they're starting to ask a lot of us as citizens. It's becoming harder. Look, I'm not going to go on a whole deal, you know, but fuck, man. It's 17 years old. 17 years old. And I want to see just as much energy for this one as there's been for all the rest of them. Mm-hmm. I want to see people up in arms there in Arkansas. If we have to get some people down there to light a fire, then we'll go down there and we'll light a fire. Because the reality is, race is a component in everything that happens in America. But the most dangerous race in America right now is clearly blue. Clearly blue. So, you know, we'll give you updates on this as it happens. It's developing. It's only been a couple of days out. 3-4 days since all of this kind of came to the forefront. So as we know more, you know, we'll talk about it a little bit more, but that's two incidents involving, you know, the police in the state of Arkansas in a short period of time right there. Like the fuck about it just being there, but we have to get a handle on this situation. This is getting crazy. It's getting wild.
Is that where the police officer, pushed over the car?
That's the same place.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Same place. Although I think he was a statey. I think that guy was a state trooper. All right. Oh, Scottie Pippen. Did you see this?
What's happened to Scottie?
I don't know. I'm so concerned about Scottie Pippen.
Right?
So there are thought warriors out there who might not know who Scottie Pippen is, which is interesting. Scottie Pippen is one of the, whatever you want to hear, whatever you believe. Scottie's one of the greatest fucking basketball players of all time. I know people don't want to think that. Are you one of these people that's down on Scottie Pippen?
No.
You're not? There's some people that say...
There would not have been 6 championships without Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen was very crucial to Michael Jordan being... I'm not taking away from Michael Jordan, but I'm just saying. He was right there with him.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say that Scottie Pippen would have never joined Michael Jordan on the Bulls. Do you think that Michael Jordan would have won championships?
He would have won championships. He would not have won six.
Six. Scottie was there for all of Jordan's six championships. The best wing defender in the history of the game, in my opinion. A complete stat filler. All right.
And didn't Jordan say that in The Last Dance? Did Jordan not co-sign that?
I don't know.
That thought? I might be making that part up.
Maybe he did, but in The Last Dance, everything worth note that Michael Jordan said was about himself. Michael, yo, I could see how Michael got it done. Nobody believes in Michael Jordan more than Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan is fucking great. All right, so, you know, Scottie Pippen, seven-time All-Star, one of the 50 greatest NBA players of all time, six-time champion. He talked about a very, very infamous moment. So Michael Jordan retired 2 years ago, played baseball. Most people, most casual fans know this. During that time, the Bulls were still good. It was actually more like a year and a half. The Bulls were still good. As a matter of fact, there was only one full season that Michael was actually gone. And in that full season, the Bulls managed to still win 55 games. 55 games. They were an elite NBA team and made it to the second round of the playoffs where they were eliminated in seven games, I think against the New York Knicks, if I remember. Well, in one of the series that that they played in that season, there was a last second shot, and Phil Jackson drew that last second shot up for a guy named Tony Kukoc, who is one of the best six men of all time in basketball, and not for Scottie Pippen, who I think was like third or fourth in MVP voting that year. So we all thought, so by the way, what's worse is that Tony came in and drilled the shot.
Phil knew what he was doing.
Phil knew what he was doing. Coach Phil Jackson was the coach of the team, and he drew the shot up for Tony Kukoc and not for Scottie Pippen. Now, Scottie refused to come in the game after he didn't get the shot. Tony got the shot. He hit the shot.
Mind you, there were 1.8 seconds left. It's not like he set out a whole quarter or something.
He didn't set out a whole quarter. 1.8 seconds. Most people thought that for whatever reason, Phil thought that Tony was in his bag a little bit better or whatever. Scotty just said that Phil Jackson is a fucking racist. Scotty Pippen, wait a second. Hold on. Scotty Pippen, run the sound, man. Run the sound. Listen to this, guys. Run the sound.
But have you talked to Phil about this? Because you, by saying a racial move, then you're calling Phil a racist.
I don't got a problem with that.
Do you think Phil was or is?
Oh, yeah. I mean, do you remember Phil Jackson left the Lakers, went, wrote a book on Kobe Bryant, and then came back and coached him? I mean, who would do that? You name someone in professional sports that would do that.
Okay. He goes on to not at all back off the assertion that Phil Jackson, Hall of Fame coach, was or is a racist. Now, here's the thing. Scottie Pippen offered absolutely zero evidence.
That's it.
Zero evidence that supports that claim.
Racism is not the same as favoritism. And maybe he favored Tony Kukoc over you in that for that last second play, which clearly was the correct decision. We don't know if Scotty would have made it or not, but Tony did, and they moved on. The fact that he called him, I was waiting for something else. Like, you brought this to my attention. When I saw the clip, I thought, okay, he's going to offer some sort of evidence. When you make that type of accusation against someone that is damaging of their reputation, we know Phil Jackson to be one way. To call him a racist, and I mean, coming from Scottie Pippen too. So it's tough, right? Because he offered no evidence. Nobody else has said anything close that I know of that even comes close to him being any sort of way. I'm not sure what the book he wrote on about Kobe. I don't know what he's referencing. Do you know?
Did he say something? Like, Phil Jackson wrote a book after his first stint with the Lakers was over. Mm-hmm. And he talked about the fact that he thought Kobe was uncoachable. He said, I can't coach this kid. It was very famous when it happened back in the day. I remember I was in my early 20s and it was a big deal. And then him and Cole patched it up. He came back and coached the team. It's gravy.
Which a lot of people have talked about playing with Kobe and how he is. So that's not even anything that was a one-off. Like, he was the only one who said it. But the reason I say that he didn't offer any evidence on one hand, so, and nobody's ever said anything, so it's like, okay, where's this coming from? But on the other hand, he played under Phil Jackson for so many years. So a part of me's like, does he know something that we don't know? Have people been too afraid because he's Phil Jackson, legendary coach, to say anything? I'm serious. Part of me goes, huh?
Yo, huh. Yo.
You, and the sad thing is, he looks crazy saying it.
Scotty,
he looks crazy.
We gotta check on Scotty Pippen. We got to check on Scottie Pippen. I'm serious. All the shit that Scottie Pippen was saying before about Kevin Durant and all of these guys and all of that stuff, that's fine. Those are his basketball opinions. Scottie looked disheveled. He got that liquor with him wherever he go. It's like he got that liquor bottle. We got to check on Scottie, man. By the way, I'm not saying that Phil Jackson, to your point, I'm not saying that it's 100% that Phil Jackson wasn't a racist. What I'm saying is, we have never heard that until now. And I think it is fucking horribly irresponsible and lame and all the way fucked up to make that type of accusation against somebody and give no evidence to support it.
Like just kept saying the same thing over and over again. Two things. One, as you pointed out, he does have a new liquor. And he's selling a book. So I don't know if this is something to get, as TD on our team pointed out to us, I don't know if this is him trying to garner attention because he's got some things that he's trying to sell. But my thing is, will we hear back from Phil Jackson? Will Phil Jackson respond to this?
He's got to respond.
I don't think he will.
He's got to respond.
I don't think he will.
He's got to respond. Phil can't be out here in these streets having people think. He calls himself the Zen master. Like, master of what? Like, all of this time he was telling us. So, like, my thing is, we have to be careful of people who do this. If this is some Kanye-esque shit, you got product to sell and you out here making outrageous claims. If this is true, Scottie Pippen got to come with some real evidence and tell some real stories that give us some insight into why Phil Jackson is a racist.
Maybe it's in the new book coming out, and this was a teaser.
Maybe it is, but it better be, because it's disgusting to throw those terms around
really
and weaponize
is.
That type of stuff just for your own personal gain, right? For your own personal shine. The reality, I've never heard that.
Dan Patrick tried to give him an out, and he was like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
I'm okay with that.
The book he wrote about Kobe, him and Kobe got to be fine. Him and Shaq had like a father and son relationship. Michael Jordan didn't want to come back without Phil Jackson. I'm not saying that any of these things did mean that Phil Jackson is not a racist. I'm just saying, if he was a racist, he hid that shit better than fucking Where's Waldo. Like, he was the best at hiding it. If he was,
his
in fact, a racist.
His definition was favoritism. Listen, do you think this is going to affect Scottie Pippen on ESPN?
Is he still on ESPN?
I think he still comes on the jump.
Oh, still on the jump. I mean, probably not. They probably want him now. Want him even more. ESPN's got some issues. Speaking of ESPN, there's something very important I want to discuss, because we got to get off the Scottie thing, but something I want to discuss. Did you see what happened this weekend with Chauncey Billups?
Van, yes, because I was shocked, because I had never heard any of this before.
Thought Warrior community, I want your help here. Because this is in the arena of sports, but it's something that really fucking matters in a lot of different ways. Chauncey Billups is an assistant coach right now with the LA Clippers. He is a former finals MVP with the Detroit Pistons. One of the defining point guards of his generation, I would say. Mr. Big Shot, they called him. He also worked for ESPN for some years before transitioning into being a coach. It was just recently announced that Chauncey Billups is getting the head coaching job in Portland. Okay. Congratulations, I guess, are in order for Chauncey Billups. He's getting the head coaching job in Portland. There was an outcry over this because upon learning that he was getting the job in Portland, the fans of the Portland Trailblazers brought to light something that I had never heard of.
Yeah.
which was the fact that in 1997, Chauncey Billups, along with his teammate at that time, a guy named Ron Mercer, were accused of rape by a woman who says that she was at a comedy club with them, left with them, ended up in the condo of one of their teammates, a guy named Antoine Walker, who played for the Celtics at that point, and that she was forced to give oral sex to them and do other sexual acts. At some point, she blacked out. She woke up next to Antoine Walker's roommate in a bed, condoms everywhere, and she was had pain in her throat and in other places, feeling like she had been violated. She was taken to the hospital. Sperm was collected. Criminal charges were never filed against Chauncey Billups and Ron Mercer, who both denied ever having gone to Antoine Walker's apartment. They did say...
Can I just also add that the medical report did coincide with her story, with bruising. There were bruises on her that showed that she had been dragged across the floor with rug burns. So it went along with everything that she was saying that happened.
Yeah, it's a disgusting situation. A tragic situation. Both Billups and Mercer deny going to Antoine Walker's apartment. They say that they were with her. She did perform oral sex on them once in the car, and I think maybe once at Chauncey Billups' apartment, is what Ron Mercer said. And then after that, they don't know what happened to her or how she got to Antoine Walker's apartment and that they were never there. Okay. They said everything that happened with her was consensual. This happened in 1997. Chauncey Billups went on to have a very impressive Hall of Fame level NBA career, being analyst with ESPN. And now that he is a coach, this is coming to light. I'm going to make you the GM of the Portland Trail Blazers. Based upon what you know right now, would you be comfortable with having Chauncey Billups as your head coach?
Absolutely not. I mean, let's add to the fact that he has almost zero coaching experience, right? I'm not taking away from who he is as a basketball player. He played, almost 17 years in the league. He just started coaching in the fall of last year. Now you add that there is this history of something happened, right? He wasn't criminally charged, but let's also add that there was a civil suit and he did settle with her.
Settled the civil suit out of court, yes.
He settled something, right? Mm-hmm. So there's something there. Just because criminal charges weren't brought, there was a civil suit file. That's enough for me to not want this person to be representative of my team, of my franchise. When you're a coach, you're a leader and you're setting an example, not just for the players that you coach, but for young boys and girls who are looking up to you as the leader of their favorite team. And when you put somebody in that place, and just like neither I nor you had ever heard about this with Chauncey Billups, with him being the coach, this is something that I believe would also just get buried and we won't talk about it anymore. And these people who look up to him will never know that this is something that was attached to his name and his legacy. There are so many other options for head coach. It's not like they only had Chauncey Billups as an option, and he doesn't even have coaching experience. Okay. I just find it appalling that this was something that they knew about, that there was a public outcry from fans of Portland, of the Portland Trailblazers, from people in the city of Portland, yet they still chose to ignore that and make him their head coach. And to me, it shows not just that the Portland Trailblazers, but also the NBA has made it very clear that it's fine to commit acts of violence or to have these type of allegations, whatever it may be. I'm only saying allegations because he wasn't criminally charged, against a coach or a player, and we can ignore it and it's fine. It's totally fine to disrespect women where their claims, this is the message I feel like they're sending out, that their claims, that the things that happen to them aren't taken seriously. That's the message that they're sending right now.
So there are a couple of things that compound this and make it a little worse. Number one is that Portland went out of its way to let everybody know that they were considering hiring a coach named Becky Hammon, who is an assistant coach with the San Antonio Spurs and has been an assistant coach with them for a little while and has a very, very stellar reputation around league circles for what a great basketball mind she is. People thought that this might be the year that Becky Hammon would get a shot to be in the head coaching job. Now, I personally don't want Becky Hammon to leave San Antonio. I want her to take over for Greg Popovich after he leaves. I think that's the perfect situation.
Some people say that's the move.
That's the perfect situation for her, but, you know, I'm sure she would jump at the opportunity to be an NBA head coach no matter what, unless there's some sort of deal in place there for her to stay and be the coach of the San Antonio Spurs. Another situation is that there was a coach before this that they considered up there in Portland, a guy by the name of Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd pled guilty to spousal abuse back in the day. So he was eventually hired by the Dallas Mavericks.
Today.
Yeah. So he was hired by the Dallas Mavericks. So Jason Kidd's situation is a little bit less ambiguous than Chauncey Billups's is. Okay. He was hired. There is a history of violence against women. And you have up in Portland another guy who seemingly has a history of violence against women. And I'll tell you why the reason why I say seemingly. I legitimately don't know what you're supposed to do here. Like, this is one where I don't know what you're supposed to do.
Why?
Because I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. It's not lost on me that there are situations like Brian Banks. There are situations like Gennaro Wilson. There are situations where things didn't happen, right? And they are very small. When I say very small, I mean about 2% of the time a woman says she was sexually assaulted and she's actually not sexually assaulted. It's very, very low. The numbers are out there. If you have an open mind and an open heart, you can go get them. It doesn't happen. So my thing is, if there are no if you're an organization and you don't want to hire Chauncey Billups because of his proximity to what happened in 1997, I have absolutely no problem with that. No problem. No problem with an organization saying, hey, that's too much for us. We don't want to be involved in that. That's fine. The fact that that situation would be automatically disqualifying is a little harder for me because he's not guilty of anything. There's an allegation out there. When I say he's not guilty of anything, I'm not saying
what
I think.
You mean like in this court system?
Yeah, I'm saying that like there's an allegation out there. An allegation that, for all intents and purposes, was adjudicated.
No, it wasn't adjudicated because he was never charged.
Well, the fact that he was never charged means that now, de facto, it was adjudicated because...
Well, there's a civil suit, which means which the burden of proof is a lot less. Mm-hmm. Preponderance of the evidence, right? So 51%. He settled that case.
Right.
He didn't take his chances in court,
right,
which he could have.
Right.
Whether that was for monetary reasons, whether it's because he did it, he settled.
Mm-hmm.
Raises an eyebrow when you settle.
So
maybe it's to avoid the publicity of it.
I don't know. I don't know why he settled. But remember now, he settled. Kobe settled. Michael Jackson settled. There have been a lot of people who've settled.
Oh, there's a lot of people who think those people were guilty.
And I'm not saying that they weren't, but what I'm telling you is that just as
we don't know the reason.
Right. Well, look, the reason could have been that they don't want their dirty laundry being out there and they don't want to be found guilty. But what
he
I'm saying
is. He was a rookie when that happened.
Right. What I'm saying is those people were allowed to continue to work.
That happened in 1997. He went on to play for 17 more years.
Right.
And then worked for ESPN.
Which
you don't have to be the coach.
Which I understand. Which I'm saying is because all of that to me is the part to where I go, all right, so it was cool enough for him to be the NBA Finals MVP. It was cool enough for him to work for Disney. But now that he wants to be the coach of the team, this is disqualifying. And I'm not saying that it shouldn't be. I'm just saying that there is a point to where I'm wondering, like, what is the standard here? Is the standard an allegation and a settlement means you did it, that's it, it's over, and anything that you're trying to progress forward in your life, you can't do it?
Well, this is what I think. it's always been wrong to answer your question when you're like, it was okay for him to play this many years in the league, to be MVP, to work for ESPN. It was always wrong. But we're living in a time now where we don't look over those wrongs and we recognize them like we should have been doing years ago, right? After the Me Too movement happened, now people aren't afraid to stand up and speak out, and companies and organizations are saying, hey, you know what? We've gotten this wrong before and we're trying to get it right now. It should have been an issue back then. It wasn't. Or, you know what I'm saying? So I think now, to answer your question, when it's like, why, you know, you didn't say why is this coming up, but like, it, why is it an issue now? Well, it should have always been an issue. It's just now we're talking about it in a different way.
Word up. Look, never knew that about Chauncey. It was incredibly disappointing to learn because he has such a sterling reputation as a guy around in NBA circles. And another thing about it that's just sad is that just how many guys just got involved in stuff like this? It seems like fucking everybody's a fucking rapist, alleged rapist, fucking abuser, toucher. It's just like, it's almost like it's three dudes out there that ain't never raped nobody.
Have you seen Promising Young Woman?
Yes.
Reminds you of that.
Yeah.
Right? Right.
It's just wild. Almost to the point to where you just like want to fucking throw your hands up. But when I first read it, I was like, yo, man, like after all of this year, they're bringing this up now. And then you read the account and the account is pretty bad, but I still don't know what you do. Like I wouldn't have any.
Well, if you're Portland, you hire him and keep him moving.
I can't say that I have a problem with them hiring him.
Okay. I do, because there were other options. He's not even qualified.
Right. And I can't say that I have a problem with them, with somebody not hiring them.
So you're in the middle. You're indifferent.
I'm not indifferent. I just don't think that I have, there's nothing. I like to be intellectually certain of things as much as possible if I'm going to have like a clear stand on them. And me taking the stand to say, if you were in any way ever involved in anything that has to do with any sexual assault, like, you're dead to me.
Well, it's because, not even that.
Because like this case right here is 1997. Yo, this is literally less than a handful of years after the Central Park Five. And it's like, as much as we're going to like, kind of, and not you, it's very, I understand, but as much as we're going to grandstand, it's just not always that cut and dry in these situations. It's not.
But I guess I would feel you if he didn't have the career that he's had and they had other options for a coach. And I think that there's certain questions that you're asked, like for a bar exam, like there's certain questions that were asked, like moral questions that you have to take. Be asked before you can not necessarily take the bar, but whether your license is granted to you. And so I think those type of questions also come with this type of job because of what you represent in this position as the leader of this team, of this franchise. I just don't feel the same way that you do because there are other options and because of the career that Chauncey has had.
Right. And the fact that your proximity
and he's not qualified.
The proximity to something like that.
I just got to keep saying it.
The proximity to something like that is enough for it to be disqualifying. I completely get that. But also, it's just the ripple effects of it were crazy because it was rumored that this guy was the guy that Damian Lillard wanted.
I thought he really did want him. I didn't know that was rumored.
Well, I don't know that Dame has come out and said that was the guy that he wanted. But obviously, Dame, who would have been a kid when this was going on, he didn't have any knowledge of this. Nobody had any knowledge of this. The fans kind of got upset with Dame, and then a report dropped that Dame is now threatening to leave Portland because the fans beat him up about it. You know what I mean? So it's just wild. It's wild. But more than anything, I'm just aghast at how many I'm just aghast every time I learn something like this. Like,
you're going to read the book?
I have to. So all of this was detailed in the book. I have to read the book. I'm not going to be caught slipping like this again. I should have read it before.
I never heard of it.
I had never heard of it either. I am going to read the book. Yeah. I'm going to read the book just so I know that I don't have a jersey on of somebody that had this situation and did this and did that and did this. It's fucking nuts. It's fucking nuts. Let's take a break. All right. Critical race theory has a new enemy. Pat Robertson.
Is it new?
Look, I thought Pat Robertson was down with us.
Listen.
Remember what he did with the...
One step forward, 15 steps back.
I gave him Unexpected Ally of the Week. See, this is the problem with Unexpected Ally of the Week. The problem with Unexpected Ally of the Week is it only lasts for a week.
Really just a podcast.
That's why it's unexpected. So he spoke out against police brutality. I gave him Unexpected Ally of the Week. When it came to critical race theory, Pat Robertson had this to say on the 700 Club.
What is it that the people of color have been oppressed by the white people, and the white people begin to be racist by the time they're 2 or 3 months old, and therefore the people of color have to rise up and overtake their oppressors, and then, having gotten the whip handle, if I can use that term, then to instruct their white neighbors how to behave. Now, that's critical race theory.
This nigga's old as dirt.
I can use that term.
Right. That nigga sound like an old problematic ass Yoda. This nigga is old
as
dirt.
He's 91.
Oh my God.
He's 91 years old. Like, if you listen to that, please make sure you go watch it. You need to see what Pat Robertson is out here looking like.
He says that critical race theory is a monstrous evil. All right. I have a broader question about critical race theory.
Okay.
Is the fight for critical race theory, in your opinion, worth giving the conservatives something big and fat to demonize?
That's a good question.
So that they can bring more people to it. Because we can have conversations about the merit of critical race theory all that we want. The reality is this. By now, anybody who wants to know what critical race theory is can go find out what critical race theory is. It is a reimagining, or not actually reimagining, it is a look at society through the lens of some of the racial disparities that have manifested themselves in Americana since the beginning. Okay, mm-hmm. It's a critical look into those disparities, how they relate to the average individual, and how racism acts as something more than an individual choice, and becomes a systemic condition. And I don't think there are very many objective-minded, open-minded people that wouldn't say that race is a systemic condition at this point, okay? The limit to which it is actually what critical race theory seeks. It's the question critical race theory seeks to answer, all right? But what it's become, and it's not being taught in schools, by the way, by and large, critical race theory is not being taught in schools. It's something that you find in the collegiate level or sometimes in the postgraduate level. It's by and large, it's not being taught in schools.
Correct.
But what it is becoming now is a big sort of demon for the right wing portion of this country and a lot of races to rally people to their side. And I'm starting to wonder, as much as I think critical race theory is useful, I don't know very many black people who live and die by it. I'm starting to wonder, is the fight for CRT worth giving them sort of a big, huge enemy that they can use to rally all of these people around to their side?
So it's too late. It's too mainstream at this point.
Yeah.
I don't even feel like we're fighting for it anymore. I feel like we're defending it, that it's not what people like Pat Robertson have to say it is.
Right.
At this point, it is something that they have taken and they have run with it. And it's every night on Tucker Carlson's show. And you're bringing in all these people to talk about it. And they are making it a bigger deal. They are, you know, implementing this fear into the homes of white folks that you better pay attention to what this is, or else they're going to grab the whip by the handle and get you like your ancestors used to get at them 300
whip
years ago. You know what I mean? It's too late at this point. It is already a hotbed issue for 2024. We're talking about it every night. We could literally stop talking about it right now, but it won't stop them from still doing it, because it is now the new thing that they're going to use in this new election to divide us even further, to scare them so they can stick together against us, because you don't want your America taken away from you again. This is the new thing. This is it.
The reason why I asked that question is because I read a very interesting article in the New York Times, and my leftist, damn near socialist, communist mind was actually fucking fried by this. Headline was, a growing body of evidence indicates that large numbers of Black and Latino voters may simply take a more centrist view on the very issues, race and criminal justice, that progressives assumed would rally voters of color to their side. So according to this article, which was really, really good in the Times, there's evidence that suggests that Black and Latino people are not quite as progressive as the progressives actually need them to be. And that we have to be a little bit more strategic in fights to build voting blocks, because some of these issues we might not have as much strength with them as we think that they do, as some of the citrus. And the thing about CRT is, whereas the 1619 Project is not critical race theory, but you know, Kimberly Crenshaw's writings are, and they are very, very, very important. But the question is it something in the broader sense of American society that is worth the fight?
I mean, no. No, but it's gotten so out of control that you just said things that aren't, I don't know if they're not public knowledge, it's just not what's being talked about. Like, people are talking about implementing CRT into the school system. It's not in the school system. Teachers don't teach this in elementary and junior high and high school. This isn't something that's being taught. But for some reason, that's the rhetoric that's out there. To your point about the party, I think that that's happening on both sides of the spectrum, right? We've got progressives, and you've got, you know, your centrists, your moderates. And I think that the Democratic Party is split, and I think that the Republican Party is split. So, I mean, what you talked about in that article doesn't necessarily surprise me. But to go back to CRT, I go back to what I said the first time. We're so far into this now, it's too late. We're in too deep. This is it. It's gonna be something every person who is running in 2024 will talk about. And for those who don't want to, they're going to have to defend it, because there's going to be accusations that they're supporting this, that it is this. I mean, listen to the ridiculousness that Pat Robertson just said. What?
Well, and that's another problem that I have. I think that the issue that I have is, it's something that is so simply taken out of context and demonized, it's a little bit more easy to demonize it than it is to explain it. And things like that are always weird. It's like, what we don't have, and that's why I say shout out to Mark Lamont Hill. You guys, if you guys are looking for a show that is simply the smartest show to watch, with a broadcaster / scholar who is giving you the business every single night in a heady and academic way on these things, watch Black News Tonight on the Black News Channel, or watch the clips on YouTube with Mark Lamont Hill, who is just doing a fantastic job in having the conversation around CRT. And so it's not like I'm saying that like it that we shouldn't strive to reimagine and not reimagine, but strive to re-educate Americans based upon these things. We definitely should. But we do have to do a better job, I think, of relating this stuff to the average person who I feel like there are white people who are listening to our podcast right now with as liberal as a audience as we have that are kind of scared of critical race theory when it's nothing to be afraid of. It's actually, when I say it's nothing to be afraid of, it's actually like a nothing thing. It's an incredibly important academic idea and way of thinking and way of looking, but it's not having any real impact on the world right now at all. Right. It's something that it's really not this big demon that it's pumped up to be. And it's almost to the point now to where I almost wish it had never become a subject to talk about.
I get that. Well, now you've got religion behind it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So now you're slapping religion on it. And so it adds a whole nother level to it, to the people who have continued to make Pat Robertson and the likes of him as popular as they are. Did you know that Pat Robertson's dad was like a Dixiecrat?
No, but that doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise me, but it's like when I knew we were talking about him and I was like really looking, going down a deep dive on him, I was like, well, no wonder he's the way that he is. His dad was against the civil rights movement completely and for segregation and Jim Crow laws. So this is who Pat Robertson is and continues to be. So no wonder he says these types of things. We can no longer make him the unexpected ally of the week.
No.
He's done.
So here's the way the unexpected ally of the week works. It's basically, you can get it, right? You can get it more than one time, but you can only lose it once. Once you fucked up, you can't come back. Like, there are certain people who can't be the unexpected ally of the week.
So what is it that they have when, like, you do something in a business establishment and they have, like, your picture on the wall and it's like, this person is no longer allowed to come back in here? We got to establish something like that. Because the first person in it is Pat Robertson.
Yeah.
No more.
Yeah. Yeah. So many people
got to name it something. Hall of Shame. I don't know.
Hall of Shame or the Thought Warrior ban list or something like that. I don't know. We got to think about something catchy. It's not jumping off at me right now. Pat Robertson's on that. But he's not on it because he disagrees with us about CRT. He's on it because there are plenty of people who I respect who disagree about CRT and don't think that CRT is useful. I happen to academically disagree with him. He's on it because he used religion and called it a monstrous evil. And that type of rhetoric doesn't have any place here in the Thought Warrior community.
No, it doesn't.
Okay. It doesn't. It doesn't have any rhetoric here.
It's like he's describing the boogeyman when he talks about it. Right. And they teach you at 2 to 3 months, years. Yeah, it sounds insane.
Right. Republican. My Pat. CRT. Fox News, Tucker Carlson. Hey, man, Tucker Carlson going to do it pretty soon. Tucker Carlson going to drop an N-word on his show pretty soon. That's just going to put him over the top. Tucker Carlson is going crazy over there, man. He's going nuts over there.
Yeah.
White replacement shit. Tucker Carlson is just going crazy. Tucker Carlson going to get on there one day like, I tell you what. You know what we got to do? We got to stop these niggers from stealing, and he's going to do nothing but have his ratings go through the roof. They don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I said it. They say it.
Why can't we say it? You know, I got to ask white people this question. And by the way, we're going to do the Higher Learning Hang. Somebody out there said that she was going to plan the Higher Learning Hang. I got to get back to her on Twitter. We're going to do the Higher Learning Hang. And after we do the Higher Learning Hang, we're going to do grapes and cheese and like champagne. We're going to watch the movie. Okay. And then we're going to do grapes and cheese and champagne. We're going to do this outdoor somewhere. We're going to get a big inflatable theater, a big inflatable thing. I'm telling you, we're going to do this. We're going to get grapes and cheese and champagne. I'm just going to, me and Bozeman are going to be around and Kalika, and we're just going to ask people questions. We're just going to ask white people questions. I just want to know. I just want to know why we have to keep explaining the N-word thing to them over and over and over again.
I think our audience probably gets it.
I don't know if that's true. I think there's some people in
our
audience.
We'll find out in the Q&A.
Especially like once they have a couple of drinks in them. I think this is what I'm saying. let's say we get 300 people to the Higher Learning Hang. Let's say it's 300.
Wow.
And let's say 30% of those people are white. So what's that math? I don't know what that math is. What is that? What's 30%
like
of 300?
Like a little less than 100.
A little less than 100. Okay. So a little less than 100 people. All right. I think out of 100 white people, once we get the champagne flowing, I think I can get 5 N-words out of them.
Goodbye. What's the say? Just the fact that you're even calculating this in your head. Why, Van?
Because I think there's a latent N-word gene that exists in white people.
So you think they're going to say it to your face?
They'll say it.
The only way that's going to happen is if you play a song.
The song
and
is
if
easy.
You don't know, now you know. That's
nigga,
that.
Oh. Nigga. And let me tell you something. If we start playing songs, that number goes up to like 15, 20. I'm talking about I can extract 5 N-words out of the thought wars. I already know who they are. Because I'll be on the I know who you N-word thought wars are. All right, time for Van's very serious question of the week. Okay. Put yourself in a situation to where we're not talking about your actual parents now. We're just talking about parents. So what I'm saying is, this is not the judge. This is not Miss Lindsay. Okay. This is just parents, general parents, the feeling that you have for parents. If you were out and you're your age now, you're not as a kid. If you were out and you saw one of your parents, either your mother or your father, on a date with somebody else, would you tell the other parent?
I've thought about this. Not on a date, but like I've thought about what I would do. I absolutely would tell the other parent.
Because
I thought about this before.
I have
before.
A friend that's going through this.
Shoot. Okay. Does the friend know, or okay, does that parent know that that your friend knows?
Nope.
So he or she saw the parent, didn't even confront the parent.
So this is what happened.
Oh, it's tough.
He or she was coming back from Miami. Laid over in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Decided, hey, I'm going to stay an extra day in New Orleans. Was out in New Orleans on the street. And saw one of their parents leaving a hotel room with a person. Person gets around the corner. They're going to say what's up to their parent. Like, hey, it's me. Picked up the phone and was trying to call. Call was going straight to voicemail. Then stops and sees their parent, who's in their mid-60s, on the sidewalk, hand on this other person's butt, and kissing. And then the person was white.
Oh, and your friend's black.
Double whammy, baby.
So, and your friend walked away.
Yes.
Okay, so here's the thing. There is no way. That is extremely, I don't want to say serendipitous, but the fact that all of that had to take place, all the stars had to align for your friend to see that, I'm telling.
Now, they knew that there was a possibility that their parent was going to be in New Orleans because of something that was going on in Metairie that they had to go do. So they knew that there was a possibility.
Did they know they were
going to
be at that hotel?
No.
See what I'm saying? Everything had to work out perfectly, or maybe not perfectly, but everything had to work out and align for that to happen. For him to walk up at that moment.
Didn't say it was a him.
Or her. Sorry.
Right.
They, for them to walk up at that moment to see that happen. I'm telling, God wanted me to see this, and it is my duty at this point to tell. I'm telling.
Did
that's God, too much for me to carry by myself.
Now, did God want you to see it to tell, or did God want you to see it to tell your parent to be like, hey, stop what you're doing. I know what it is that you're doing.
God wanted me to tell.
God wanted you to tell.
God wanted me to tell. Honestly, though, that's devastating. I feel really bad for your friend. I say it like it would be easy. It would be really, really hard for me. Maybe harder, depending if it was mom or dad. But I don't know. That's too much for me to carry.
I told them to go to the parent first and ask them to make it stop. Because I know, I know what the dynamic of this relationship is, and this is going to be destructive.
Let me tell you something. You really trust that parent to stop?
No.
Oh, yeah, I'll stop. No. Honestly, I'd probably be like, you have 3 days to tell, or I'm telling. This is the easiest question you've ever given me. I'm telling. Because if the parent finds out that I knew.
Yeah, that's another thing.
You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like,
if the parent.
And
yeah.
I would go to the parent that's cheating first, and I would be like, you put me in this situation. I'm extremely uncomfortable. I don't want to be in this. I'm giving you an opportunity to speak your piece first. If you don't do that and handle that, then I got to say something. This is too much. And I wouldn't feel bad about it because I'm not cheating. You did this to the family.
So this person.
You see how much I've thought about this
before? Yeah, you're getting so upset. So the person goes, you know, I didn't see them, so I could just pretend like I never saw it.
No.
I was like, no, you can't. You can't pretend like you never saw it.
Your friend's going to be in therapy too, if not already. That's tough. That's tough.
Everybody join the therapy bandwagon.
That's tough.
All right.
This is a dark, serious question. I feel so sorry for your friend. Like, my heart really goes out to your friend. That's tough.
But
God wanted you to see it for a reason.
Now look, I know this is a touchy subject with us, but do you feel bad that I got a couple jokes off? It's not a touchy subject, man. I don't want you to feel like you can't joke. No, in this situation, I had to get a couple jokes off.
It probably made your friend feel a little bit better, to be honest. Like they probably needed a laugh. I would need a laugh.
Yeah, I had to get a couple jokes off because I ain't gonna lie, it's just weird to see a person of our age like really going through it like this.
Yeah.
Like behind their parents. And these aren't like attractive parents either.
That's an unnecessary detail. You didn't need to include that in
I'm saying these are some Pat Robertsons. You know what I'm saying? These not like the old, you know, like Denzel is 64 and they still with it. These are some people that you don't think fuck anymore.
Okay, but what was the woman like other than white? You gave us that.
I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't say it was a woman, by the way. I said it was another person.
Oh, you didn't. Sorry. I'm picturing it in my head.
I didn't say it was a woman because I don't want to give nothing away. I personally think that the other person was on the clock.
What do you mean?
I think that there was some hired help that was going on. If you ask me from the description of the other person, I think it was a sex worker.
Oh, no. So it's not a relationship.
I don't think so. I don't think it's a relationship.
On the clock.
Just basically, look for them. Make your money. All right. That's a very serious question of the week. Look.
What hotel was it?
I don't think you said.
It was definitely on. Was it in the French Quarter?
Yeah, it was definitely Canal though, because he said they walked out Canal.
Oh, it's Canal. It's probably Marriott.
Yeah, so it was definitely on Canal though, since they walked out Canal and they walked down. And he was like, you know, first thought maybe
very public street
business, doing fucking the most. That was my thing.
That's a very public street. That was my thing.
I was like, this might be like doing fucking the most. Doing the most. For the first time, I'm going to do a survey on our thought warriors about this particular very serious question. Oh, we're doing it on Twitter.
We're doing it on Twitter.
We're doing it on there. Would you tell? Would you fucking tell? All right. All right. That's enough. Tell you thing caps off, but do not stop learning. I am Van Lathan.
I'm Rachel Lindsay.
We out.